Well, hello, NE gang, and welcome to another episode of Anything and Everything with Nina Masugu, the place where every topic gets a seat, right? And we've got plenty of space, trust me. Please don't forget to like and subscribe and join the official NE gang. And of course, we do like hearing from you. So please do continue with those comments and those DMs that you always drop us, okay? And very important, we are available on Apple Podcasts and on Spotify. So you can listen to us anywhere and anytime, picking up the kids, going to do groceries or running some errands. We will be there. Okay. So I'm very excited about today's episode, actually, because I am joined by a very good friend of mine who likes acting shy. I want to put this out there in bold. Okay. He likes acting shy. And I actually call him a photographer, your doom, because if you've never had this guy take a picture of you, what do you even mean? Okay. And that's why I call him a photographer, your doom. He has worked with celebrities and most of the biggest names in terms of influencers in South Africa, if not all of them, actually. He's also worked with the likes of Jay-Z and Beyonce, Connie Ferguson, David Beckham, Boy T, Casper Nyovest, just to name a few, and actually all of the influencers, okay? I'll change it now. He also holds a BA honors degree in motion picture medium, which he studied at AFTA, and was also recognized at the Forbes Africa 30 under 30 list, where he was recognized for his contribution to the industry. Okay. Ladies and gents, please welcome Austin Malema.
Thank you very much.
Hello, Mganwam.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good.
Look at you acting shy.
Listen, it's very hard to sit here and just, you know, keep quiet or do nothing when someone is mentioning all your accolades. It's like, what do I do now?
And you do this all the time. Like, even when I say, yes, you're the best, you know, like, it's a thing. So I know it's a thing, right? But how are you doing? How was your day today?
I think today has been a great day. Not a lot happening. I think it's been a very chill day. We're getting into winter where things are slowing down. Business slowing down gives you time to think and re-strategize going into winter, and then you're ready for summer.
Of course. Okay. And I mean, are you liking this time off? Just having a day where you can do things that normal people do, you know?
I think I do, but sometimes it's very weird because when things slow down, you go from being very busy into a slow period, and then you're just like, what do I do with myself? Because you're so used to being preoccupied.
You are such a creative. Creatives just want to be constantly busy.
Yes, because we want to be creating. We want to be planning on what to do next. And I think it's even worth it when you're a business owner, because you're always trying to figure out what's the next move that you're making.
Yes, of course.
So you're looking at what is happening. What are the trends? What are we moving towards? Mm. So that's always what's, you know, preoccupying my mind.
Yeah.
But right now things are slowing down and I've got time to breathe and time to think, which is really amazing.
Do you make time to rest, like, intentionally?
I do.
Like, do you?
That,
why am
that
I
is
finding
a real
this
thing.
So hard to believe?
No. Trust me. I think on weekends, most of the time, I am doing nothing. Unless we have like really big jobs that we're working on.
That you need to also need be there personally.
Be. I need to be either there personally or helping the team or managing the team that's working there. So I try not to take on too much and also just have time for myself.
Yeah. And get to sleep.
Yes.
Properly. Do you have a life? Like, do you have... like times where you're with friends at the movies, or you are at a hangout, or you're playing soccer. Like,
I don't know about soccer, but my favorite pastime is watching rugby.
I know you really love rugby. Yeah,
so I watch rugby and I have a braai. Like, my friends know, like, when it comes to braais,
they're the braai master.
Where to go,
yes,
where to be.
Yes,
I really love braaiing and hosting my friends at home.
Mm-hmm.
I don't enjoy going out much anymore. I think my job kind of ruined that for me when I was young.
Yes, of course.
Because I did a lot of it.
Yeah.
So I've kind of now, you know, become a recluse, and I like having my friends come visit, and then we can sit, watch rugby, make a few steaks, you know, and
just
play
chill.
Games. Yeah.
So that's your downtime?
That's my downtime.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I'm about to ask you a few questions, right? We're not going to explain them.
Yes.
It's either this or that.
Okay.
Right?
Fair.
First of all, in terms of your editing, right? Is it Capture One, Photoshop, or Lightroom?
Damn.
I see you really had to think about that one.
Lightroom, it's quicker.
Lightroom, it's quicker.
Yeah.
Why was that hard to?
No, because I have to think about what we're doing. So
okay.
Because we don't have to explain them, it's really tricky because Capture One is the best in terms of color correction and color management.
Okay.
But on a job that has a quick turnaround time, Lightroom is the best.
Okay. Because yeah. Like you said, it's quick.
Yeah.
Okay.
Quick.
Got you. And then do you prefer film or digital camera?
Digital. Because you get to see what you're doing and you can correct it immediately. And I know people will be like, yeah, film is great. Film has great looks. It's amazing.
But it's not practical.
It's not
per
practical
se.
For yeah. today's world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And then in terms of a lens,
yes.
I really want to hear this one. Zoom lens or prime lens and why? Here I need an explanation.
Zoom lens, variety. Okay. A lot of people would prefer a prime. But for me, I want to be able to zoom in and out without having to interfere moments.
Okay.
So when people are sitting and I can see a great moment, I don't want to be right in front of them. I want to be able to, you know, get the wide and see their reaction
okay.
and then get closer for yes. a more of an emotive image.
Of course, because yeah. it gives you those two options.
Yes.
Okay. And then in terms of the photography that you enjoy.
Yes.
Is it more the editorial or the eventing side of things?
I enjoy the more editorial type of work that we do, the lifestyle stuff.
Yeah.
That's more fun because it just allows you to, you know, carve your own style
of
when
course.
You're doing that.
Yeah.
And, you know, when it comes to events, you're just shooting what's there and you're not, you know, creating your own moments. And I feel like a lot of us are trying to define our styles. Hence, editorial becomes the best way or the best work to, you know, create a voice for yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. What do you think makes a terrible picture?
Oh, damn. What makes a terrible picture? I don't want to say a terrible camera.
that too.
No. Cell phones make terrible pictures because a lot of people get so consumed in their cell phones.
Even
that when
our
you take
iPhones.
A picture, no, not taking it with your iPhone. But when I capture someone and they're sitting there on their iPhone, it takes away from the moment and the picture's terrible. Like even when you're posing and you've got your phone in your hand or your phone in your pocket and I can see the print.
Okay.
That makes terrible pictures for me.
Yes. Not the background. I think a background makes, it can cause a picture to be terrible.
No, I think you can work with the background. Backgrounds can be readjusted.
You can
edit it. You can move a person around for lighting for any reason or just to change the background. I feel like backgrounds, you can always survive with them. But it's, you know, things that, you know, obstruct your eyes
yes.
in the image that really distract you, then they stand out because you can't really do anything about them.
Mm.
Especially like in lifestyle stuff where you don't have the time to be retouching
yes.
and getting rid of things.
Yes.
So those things become a very, like a permanent thing that's sitting there and you're like, if I had an extra moment where we can just take away that cell phone from your pocket or you put it in your back pocket. Those,
just remove
like for
it
me,
from the picture.
I'm a big hater of cell phones. Like when, like if you look at
in,
most
in
of the
picture,
photos.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, if you look at most photos where I'm taking photos, I try not to have a cell phone in sight.
So you tell your people, please
yeah.
you just put your phone away.
Please, back okay. pocket or in your purse.
Okay.
That's it.
What is the one, just give me one thing.
Yeah.
Right, that you think that people don't know about photography. Like the bad side of photography. Just one thing.
The bad side of photography? Mm. Oh my God, it's how long it takes to make the pictures look great.
Okay, it's the editing
part.
I think
it's the editing.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever found anything. I've never thought about it in that way, actually.
Mm.
What's the bad thing about photography?
Because, I mean, there's quite a lot of good sides of it.
There are a lot of good sides as a career.
Yeah.
But what are the downsides? I just think it's not as easy as people think it is. I think that might be it, actually.
Yeah, I think.
Because a lot of people think, oh, you just take a picture. You just point your camera and then you shoot.
Mm.
And then it's just like, no, there's a lot of technicality. There's a lot of calculations
that, goes behind it.
That go behind each picture that you're taking. Whether it's lighting, whether it's, you know, what you're trying to capture, whether it's the depth or the focal length that you're trying to showcase in the images.
Mm.
There are many things to consider when it comes to taking photos. It's not as simple as,
just
going to point the camera and click.
Yeah.
Like there is a reason you do every little thing that you do, you know.
Yeah.
Choosing the lens. There's a reason you choose a specific lens for a specific image.
Mm.
Or, you know, shallow depth of field. between your subject and their background. There's a reason you use, you know, a prime lens and then you open up to 1.4 or 1.2. You know, it's not just like, oh, I just want to open up to 1.2 because my lens allows me to.
Yeah.
Unless people do that just because they can. Mm-hmm. But then I just think that technically that is a bad approach to photography.
So, and speaking of lenses that you use, if you had an option to use one lens for the rest of your life now, you have don't have any options. You don't have any option. Oh, like, you must use one lens. Which one
would
you use?
Probably go with the lens I started with. I started off with a camera with a 5D and a 50 mil lens. This is 2019. This is 2015.
So yes. You'd want to bring that back. Is it still a thing now, that lens?
The lens is still, everybody still loves a 50 mil prime. Okay. But everybody's moving towards a 35 or 24 prime. But I think it's the most versatile prime that you can have. It's not too wide.
Mm-hmm.
It allows you to also get closer. So for me, that lens allows for a lot more compared to other lenses where if, you know, you go too wide, your image goes obscure, which is weird, right?
Of course,
Unless that's the type of look and feel that you're going for. So I don't like those sort of lenses.
Mm-hmm.
I don't shoot a lot with primes, to be honest. I shoot a lot with zoom lenses, with variable focus lenses, and mainly because I want to be able to play around. So a 50 is probably the best lens that I would go to if I had one lens to work with. 50 millimeter, it allows me to do anything I want.
Yes,
that's it.
Okay, so it gives you the options.
Yeah.
Okay. And I mean, I want us to get into just a bit when you were at AFTA, right?
Yes.
Because you actually lectured there for some time.
I did.
Yes. I wanted to get into that. How did you get into that? Did you do it because, you know, you wanted to just get a bit of exposure?
So when I did my honors degree, at the end of fourth year,
mm-hmm.
I did not have anything planned on what to do next year, which was supposed to be my first year working.
Yes.
And AFTA offered the role to lecture first year as a junior lecturer. And I was like, you know what? This would be great because I don't have anything concrete that I'm going to be doing. So I'm going to take this on while I'm looking for other opportunities. And that also allowed me to still take on my jobs as a photographer and videographer. So it didn't stop that.
Okay.
So it kind of allowed me to develop on that end.
Okay.
And then I worked at AFTA for a year. And then right after that, it actually allowed me to meet the person who gave me my first job, which is the funniest thing.
Because and I want to hear all about that.
Yeah, because while I was there was a gentleman who was doing his master's at AFTA, David Max Brown, and he had already been a producer in the industry. And right after I finished my year as a junior lecturer, he had become a producer on Skeem Saam when it came back as a telenovela and no longer a series.
Yes.
And when that happened, he called me and he was like, hey, listen, there's an opening for someone to be a junior editor or an assistant editor at Skeem Saam.
Mm-hmm.
Would you be interested in that?
Yes.
And I was like, definitely. And that was my first job that I did in the industry where I went and I worked as an assistant editor, but I also came up with the workflow for the editors because they were moving from Adobe to Avid.
Is this, you just arrived there and now you are now giving people like a workflow.
Yes.
Are these things that you had learned in school or you just knew?
So I had learned how to edit on Final Cut and I also learned how to use Premiere.
Mm-hmm.
And when I started working at Sesani Studios, the studio only allowed for Avid suite.
Okay.
And I spent a month figuring out how Avid worked and trying to make the workflow as easy as possible for the editors.
Gotcha.
Because most of them had not used Avid or had not used it in a while.
Mm.
So when they came in, I had to sit and show them how to work within the bins or how Avid worked.
Yeah.
Because it's easy for an editor to come in and learn a new program because most of the things are the same.
Yeah.
You've got a timeline, a viewer, and it's just a different approach to it.
Yeah.
But as long as you've got a timeline and a viewer, you know what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just the navigation that I had to help them with on how to navigate things things from the server, how to pull things in. And then it actually became easier because at the end, I ended up, me and another guy ended up doing all the scenes for them. And then they would just walk in, open the project, and then just, you know, pick the scenes from the timeline, put them on the episode timeline. So you became an asset then, eh? I did become an asset. And how long were you there? I was there for about 6 months. Okay. And then I left.
I mean, that's, he leaves. We had a chat online about you leaving, which yes. I really love.
Yeah.
But can we say that SkimSum was your big break or?
SkimSum was my biggest break because even after that, it launched me into the world of editing.
Yes.
Because right after that, there was a drama that was on SABC 1, a political drama called Ihao.
Okay. So this was before the Queen.
Yes. This was before the Queen.
Okay.
Ihao was the first series I worked on as an editor and not as an assistant.
And as an assistant.
Yes. So I got that job through a friend who I went to varsity with, who got the job to start working on Ihao as the main editor, as the offline editor.
Okay.
And then I took on the second part of that. So it was a 12-part series. And then I edited from episode 6 or 7 to 12, and he did episode 1 to 6.
Yeah.
And then that was my first time working on a full project as an editor.
Yeah.
And then right after that, I went and I worked on Selima Tunzi.
Really? As what at Selima Tunzi?
So because I left SkimSum where it was a full-time job, the job on Ihao, it was a contractual job where we only did one season and the 12 episodes.
Yeah.
So right after that, I didn't have a job and I got a job to work on Selima Tunzi as an editor. So I would edit weekly episodes of Selima Tunzi. So it would be on a Monday.
So hold on. Where's the photography now? Would you have time to do photography?
So one of the reasons I left my job at SkimSum was because I felt like it was not really allowing me to do photography. Okay.
Which is your first love.
Yeah. It became my first love because while I was in film school, I was really obsessed with film. And I was like, I'm going to become a filmmaker.
Yes.
And this is the one thing that I am really paying attention to.
Yeah.
And then I started doing photography on the side and I started making money with photography.
And you're like, I can make money. Yeah, I can make money here.
Yeah. And I could only do my photography on weekends because I had a full-time job. So I would come in the evening to edit today's rushes and then I would leave in the morning. And then I'd spend the rest of the day either working as a photographer or sleeping, recovering for another night shift. And then right after that, I discovered that I didn't really like that.
Okay.
And besides the fact that I also got overlooked on a job where they brought in new editors instead of promoting from within. I was like, you know what? It's okay. Because I had worked out, you know, the workflow. So if you're going to skip me and bring in new people,
then actually, it just means I'm not really. You guys don't see me.
Yeah, you don't see me. So I decided to walk away from that and focus on the photography mainly. And then the editing would be a supplementary thing because if I don't have a photography job, then I will do videography. If I don't have videography work, then I will edit because then it means that I'm multifaceted. So I can edit and then I can do videography. Whichever way, I'm going to make money.
Yes.
So I needed something to secure my rent every single month.
Of course. And Selima Tunzi did that for you.
Yes. Okay. Selima Tunzi secured my rent because every single Monday, I knew that I was editing an episode of Selima Tunzi that's going out on Saturday. When that episode went out, I had enough money to pay my rent.
Mm.
Then the rest of the time was me doing photography to be able to hone the skills.
And of course, just be happy because this is your first love.
True. And also to meet popular people. I always tell people that I got into photography because I wanted to meet celebrities.
Next question, right? You are known for, I mean, that's also how I knew you, right?
Yes.
And I don't remember that there's a tweet by Pearl Toosey.
Yes.
I think 2016?
Yeah.
That's the first time I knew about you, right? When Pearl posted a picture and you commented on it that you had taken.
The photo, yeah.
Yes. Has it always been a strategy of yours that, you know what, I want to specifically shoot celebrities or influencers? I mean, also influencers at that time weren't so big, obviously, as they are now.
Yeah.
But have you always just been like, I want to be with these certain people?
So the big thing about it for me was in the beginning, there was no plan. Okay. The plan was to always get into the clubs where all the artists were and all the big parties, because I always wanted to shoot them, right? And then eventually, because of the access, like if you shot the popular people, you were the guy. You still are in today's world.
Still are.
If you shoot the popular people, you still are the guy, right? Yeah. Mm. And for me, that was the idea. Like, shoot popular people, and that will elevate, or it will get you seen by more people.
Of course.
That's the first thing.
100%.
Because it's the easiest thing. Yes. You shoot a famous person posts your picture, they tag you, then people see who took the photo. Then
they
want to
use you.
There you go.
Yes.
So that was the first, plan, right? Yeah. And then I then realized that these people also work with brands.
Mm.
And I've been trying to work with these brands, and it's not simple. You know,
to get
the brands to look at you. But if you shoot the popular people, then there's an association where people say, oh, did you see so-and-so? Oh, AKA posted a photo. Casper posted a photo.
Yeah.
It was taken by Austin.
Yes.
That means that the people from the brands are watching those people, and it opens the gateway for them to work with you as well.
Yes.
And that became the way for me to start working with brands, because I was like, if I can work with enough celebrities who work with brands, it becomes easy for me to have the conversation with the brands and say, look at what I'm doing for this person.
Yes.
And then other brands are also seeing my work through that person. Then they may want to work with me as well.
Yes, but I'm just interested in, like, literally how you did that, right?
Yeah.
Would you get to Taboo, for example, and see, you know, a Boiti or a Pearl and be like, hey, can I take a picture of you?
No, I started getting booked by the guys who used to host at those places.
Okay.
So ASL, ALS was a thing, or Love Sundays with Tibbs was still a thing. Mm. So I would get booked by the guys or the DJs who are playing at those gigs.
Course. Yeah.
And then I would go do videography and photography for them.
Okay.
And then guys like APH would, you know, post his recap video for a weekend.
Yes.
And I would have done that. Or a Speedstar. I would spend
Is this now Austin by yourself? Or did you have someone that helped
you? No, it was just me as Austin.
Okay, so you were a hybrid.
Yeah, I was a hybrid shooter.
Okay.
I would do photos and video at all of these places.
Okay.
So I'd shoot photos and video for you today. And then I get home, start cutting the video, and then edit the photos, send the photos so that you have something to post.
Yeah.
And then by tomorrow morning, you'll have a video to post.
Yeah.
And then after that, ALS, I remember Makusini used to also host events. And then they would book me to come, you know, capture images and video.
Yeah.
And then they would share that on Instagram and Facebook, right?
Okay.
And that kind of allowed for me to work with them, and then access to the artists that they worked with
of
as
course.
Well. One of the first artists that I worked with was DJ PH and Speedstar.
Okay.
So Speedstar and PH would book me to do the recaps for the weekend. So they'd be playing in Joburg, Cape Town, and Durban.
So you would travel with them?
I would travel with them.
Okay.
And then right after that, it kind of allowed me to get into bigger spaces
of
where
course.
Brands would
Recognize
be working
you
with.
Now.
With
yeah.
Yes. And brands would see the work that I do through them. And then people would be like, oh, we want to book this guy.
Yeah.
You know, so that kind of allowed for me to, you know, transition from just working with, you know, the event promoter to working with the artist, from working with the artist to the brands that are affiliated with those events or those artists.
So was there a big gap between Sele Mathunzi and the Queen? Because I'm assuming in
that gap,
then this was you now doing photography.
Yes.
You know,
there was
and traveling with the artists.
There was a gap.
Yeah.
I think, you know, my career is like crazy. Like when I start thinking about all those things that I have done.
Yeah.
I don't know if you remember a show called The Real Husbands of Johannesburg with Maps, Les, Trevor Gumbi.
Oh, God. I remember that very well.
So
you're part of that?
I edited the show as well as part of New Vision Entertainment. So, you know, there's just like, oh, my God. I just now thinking about it. It's just been a whole mishmash of, you know, falling in love with photography and then having to not do so much because I hadn't made a name for myself, and then going back to, you know, the basic training that I have in editing just to make sure that I'm able to have a job so that I don't struggle.
Yes.
So it was always in between. Like one day I'm really doing really well in photography, and then if photography is not doing well, then I'm going back to get a job where I'm editing on a contract or I'm coming into edit, you know, a number of episodes of a show because they need an editor and, you know, it's crunch time.
Yeah.
So I'll do that. And then right after that's done, I'm back to doing photography on the weekend or during the week. And then right after I left the real New Vision, after the Real House, the Real Husbands of Josie,
yeah.
I ended up working on The Queen.
Mm.
And even there, I was there for about 8 months as well.
Okay.
And then that was the last real job I had. Yeah.
Mm.
I edited.
And this is in which year?
I worked on The Queen the very first year. I think that was 2015.
Okay.
2015, 2016.
Mm.
I worked on the very first season, I think, until about episode 88.
Okay.
And then I left.
Okay.
That was the last real job where I was like, I am now going to solely focus on photography.
Okay.
And I, from then on, I solely focused on photography, and it had allowed me to meet Dino Mweketsi, who became my very first celebrity client.
And that's how then it started out.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I can imagine then, because you said that if you weren't having such a great time with photography, you knew that, okay, I can do editing.
Yeah.
So it's very important to just know more than one skill, obviously. Yeah. To not focus on one thing completely.
I think focusing on one discipline, if it allows you to thrive
okay.
at a certain point, is a great thing.
Mm-hmm.
But at the beginning or at that point of my career, photography and videography weren't really as
okay.
as accessible as they are today.
Yes.
Right? And or they were not really needed as they needed today in everyday events,
yeah.
Influencer content.
Of course.
So at that time, you either had to work with, you know, a brand that's doing something on the weekend, and that's the job that you had.
Mm.
And you needed something else to keep you busy during the week because you were not getting booked as a photographer midweek to do content for a brand.
Yeah.
You know, so for me, that kind of made sense. But in today's world, you can have one simple,
of course.
You know, source of income, whether it's photography or videography, or you can still do both.
Mm.
But you'll still learn that one is more rewarding than the other, or one is getting more bookings compared to the other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's now what, 2016 when you're with Dino?
Yes, 2016, 2017.
Okay, yeah. You're with Dino, and then obviously that's how you start getting gaining traction now,
yes.
from so other celebrities.
Yes. Mm. So 2016, 2017, I had started working with Dino. From Dino, I started working with Thando Thabete. Thando Thabete led to a whole lot of other people. Because again, sitting with these people means that you are getting access to other people.
Of course.
And then that also 100%. Allowed me to, you know, start photographing them on red carpets.
Mm.
So when we started doing red carpets in South Africa, there weren't people who were posting live content from red carpets.
Yes.
You would have to wait until the Sunday Times to be able to see
the next day,
the fashion
from the metros,
yeah,
for
from
example.
The metros or the Safters,
yeah, yeah.
And I remember the one time we just drove to Sun City for the Safters, and we were like, look, we'll find a way, we'll make it work.
Mm-hmm.
And we got there and we started taking photos on the carpet, and then we posted live on Twitter. I used to be like the guy on Twitter at that point.
Did. Yes. I remember that point.
Yeah. So I used to just, you know, take photos, post them live on Twitter, and people would see the fashion. And I realized that that's the loophole that nobody's looking at,
yes.
right? Nobody's posting
live
instantly.
Editing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nobody's editing live. Nobody's posting instantly as well. So we just started doing that on our cell phones, and it kind of allowed us to become the first to be doing it in South Africa.
When you're saying on your cell phones, are you using a different software or just...
So at that time, it was the new cameras that had Bluetooth on them, and they could allow you to download photos via Bluetooth
okay.
onto your phone.
From your camera.
From your camera, yeah.
Oh, nice.
So I would be able to download things on my camera and then edit them on Lightroom or VSCO. It's either was VSCO, and then I would
at
edit...
At that time.
Let's do that again.
Okay.
So at that time, we would, you know, download the photos through Bluetooth from our cameras to our phones through VSCO, and then we would edit them in VSCO, and then we would post them on Twitter. And that allowed us to have this traction where you can immediately see what someone is wearing on the carpet, and then you can comment
on
it on the day. Yeah.
Yes.
And it kind of allowed us to be the first people in terms of that. And that's what also allowed my traction to grow in terms of social media.
Yes.
And the social media following that you were garnering at that time, because people knew if it's an award show, we're going to go to Austin's timeline and then and we're going to see all the photos.
The latest.
Yeah.
But I mean, you obviously had a drive to for you to figure out that, no man, we can do this thing today.
Yeah.
Right. What is the importance of just doing your research in your industry, or like just knowing the trends that are happening? You know, because obviously you were so into it that you saw a gap.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think it's very important to know where your industry is today and also look at where it's going.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people make the mistake of just focusing on what they're solely doing today because it's working. But there's a big change that is happening in every industry every other day.
And constantly.
Constantly. Mm. And I feel like every industry has a 5-year, you know, lifespan in what is popular today to be as popular as it can be. Yeah. And after 5 years, there's a big change.
Yeah.
And I feel like that kind of, you know, allowed me to figure out my next move, because I was like, okay, cool. So right now it's popular to do things on your phone, but how long will that last you? Because everybody else is going to start doing it.
Mm.
Yeah. So before everybody starts doing it, how about you maximize it?
Yes.
And then you start working with the award shows, doing the content for them. Because I was doing it for myself.
Yes.
And then it was great for my popularity, but it was also a proven concept that you could go and sell to the award show to say, hey, we are able to do ABC.
Yeah.
So nobody's doing live content like we are.
Mm.
So how about we do your red carpet live, and then we can do part of the show live as well.
Yeah.
That kind of allowed us to upsell ourselves. And then we started doing award shows where I would do the red carpet, and then I would have a team working with me to edit the photos.
Of course.
And then the social media team would post live.
Okay.
That kind of allowed us to, you know, transition into that space.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah.
So, I mean, at this point now, you are with, you know, celebrities. You are in your flow now.
Yes, ma'am.
Right. What are some of the challenges that you had to deal with at that time?
I think some of the biggest challenges at the beginning of my career were knowing your worth, number one, because this is something new and not something that everybody was doing.
Mm.
Right. So you're kind of like giving yourself away to whoever's willing to pay an amount, and you don't know how much that is.
Yes.
And I think that was the biggest challenge. I needed to figure out what the real value of what I'm bringing is and how to cost for it.
Yes.
And I think it took a lot of mistakes and a lot of learnings in doing that, because I remember I used to charge like 500 rand an hour at some point. And at some point it was 500 rand for the full day. Ooh. You know, so it was trying to figure out the value of what I'm bringing and how much I can really cost for it. And again, as a young person, any amount of money sounds like a lot of money.
Yes.
Because
yes.
to you, it's new figures.
Yes.
It's figures you haven't experienced. So it sounds great. And you're like, yeah, I'm getting paid 25,000 rand to do this entire show for like 2 days. And it's like, no, you could be getting a lot more. Because of the amount of work. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because the amount of work that you're doing. But because you don't know the value of what you hold, you're just giving it away for whatever, you know, is given to you, because you believe that that is the value of what you hold.
Which I think is quite tricky. I mean, for most young photographers right now, upcoming photographers right now, they don't know how to quote and they don't know the value that they bring. Where do they go?
Some overestimate it.
And some overestimated, right?
Yeah.
Like where do they go? Who do they ask? How do they know how to really, you know, take what they bring to the table and the time spent on that and the quality that they deliver, obviously. How do they quote for that? For someone who actually has no idea.
I think today's world is very tricky to really figure out how you bring yourself to a costing, because, and what I'm about to say is probably going to be frowned upon, but the industry is very oversaturated. It's almost like everybody wants to be a content creator.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That you now want to get a job at whatever cost it is, because
as long as you get the job.
As long as you get the job. And that's the worst part.
Yeah.
Because everybody now can buy a camera. Access is there.
Mm-hmm.
And then everybody can take photos. You learn from YouTube how to do it.
Yep.
And then you now compete with someone who's been doing it for 10 years.
Yes.
And then you say, I am the same value as them because I can just take the photos. So I believe that my value is the same to an Austin who's been doing it for 16 years.
Yes.
So you must pay me the amount that you pay Austin.
But
it's like, okay, but why? And then they say, because the work that I do is similar to quality to him.
Mm.
And you can't argue that. But then it's like, is it all based on the quality of work or also the experience yes, that one has?
I wanted to ask that. Yes, 100%.
Because that becomes the issue. So
that is the issue.
I think it's very tricky in today's world to say this is how much you base your rate on. Because yeah. someone who just started yesterday is probably going to charge the same rate as me with my 16 years, 15 100%. Years of experience.
Yeah.
It won't really matter to them because mm. they're just like, Austin can charge this much.
Why can't I?
Yeah. yeah. And then it just becomes
that is a big conversation altogether.
Yeah, it is.
A separate one that needs a separate day. Because like you said, in this day and age, one can literally log on to YouTube, learn how to, you know, there's gimbals, there's
yeah, you learn how to shoot like a pro 100%, today.
Yes.
And you've never done it for a day in your life. You work, you walk out there and you've got all the equipment and then you say, I am worth X. Mm. And then when they ask you why, and then you just say, but I can do the work that X can do, so why can't you pay me X? And then it's like, yeah, but you know that the X that you're comparing yourself to has been doing this for a lot longer. And the other thing is people don't know what we really sell. Because yes. in terms of the work that I do and my business does, we don't sell just the visuals.
Mm.
We sell solutions.
100%.
And that's the biggest differentiator between us and most people, because people come in to sell you, this is what we can do for you.
Mm.
But we sell an entire solution-based, you know, approach.
Yes.
We don't sell just the content. The content is the end result of what you're doing.
Yes.
But because we've been in all these, you know, situations where we've seen every little thing that could go wrong,
mm.
that gives us more leverage.
Yes, because then you have a solution for it.
There you go.
Yes.
And that's where the real value is. The yeah. value is not in just the work. The value is in the experience and what you bring to the table.
Of course.
Yeah.
Have you ever turned down a job with a brand or with a certain person,
I
a
have.
Client? Why?
I have.
What would be the reasons?
I think sometimes the value of money or money cannot buy, you know, my work.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people have the misconception that, you know, you just do it because of money,
mm.
right? And
mm.
sometimes, yeah, the money or the bag looks nice,
great,
but if
yeah.
it doesn't come with peace, there's no point in doing
when
the work.
Did you get to that point? Because I can
it
imagine
took
this
a long
wasn't
time.
You. This wasn't you
time.
In 2010, right?
No, it was not.
When did you get to that point where, you know, you'd rather just be home sleeping, have your peace, than deal with a really difficult client?
I've done that a few times.
Yeah.
I've had two different periods where I've done that.
Okay.
So mainly because of the businesses that I've been in. So mm. at one point I had a different business.
Yeah.
And during that time, I remember I was listening to an interview on the radio and I remember it was Nomza Mombata who was talking.
Yeah.
And she said, you know, she's had to say no to some work because it just didn't fit her brand, and
yeah.
the money was great, but it just didn't fit who she was as a brand, right? And I was like, that makes sense. I don't know why we don't do it, because as photographers, we don't think about our brands. You just think
don't.
About executing the
yeah.
job
yeah.
and then onto the next one.
Yeah.
And, you know, at some point I realized that some jobs don't come with peace.
Mm.
Especially jobs where you're now fixing people's problems
oh.
or a job that went to someone else and now you've come in to fix it.
Yeah.
Right. And I used to do a lot of fixed jobs where I come in to redo the shoot and the budget was already spent on someone else.
Something else. Yeah.
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 And now you're getting half instead
yes.
of the full budget.
Yeah.
And it was one of those moments where I was like, people don't really value what you do. So if they don't value that and they think that money is the biggest contributor to what you're doing, at some point you need to show them that it's mm. not always about money.
Mm.
Money is great to have.
100%.
But do you know what's better? Peace.
Yeah.
Or working with people who value what you do.
Mm.
There's so many different ways to approach this
mm.
because a lot of us would say, yeah, but why are you turning down the money? Why are you doing this? Because if I am in this situation, I am not being respected
yeah.
or I'm not being valued.
Mm.
I'm not saying being valued by being scared of or being paid hundreds of thousands.
Yes,
but
just
people
knowing
who,
your value.
Know my value
mm.
and they respect what I'm doing.
Yes.
And they work with you as a contributor and not people who are like, I'm paying you, so you must just do what
figure
I'm doing.
It out. Also, yeah. Just...
And it's like sometimes you walk into those situations and then you're already too far gone
mm.
and you can't walk out. But sometimes you have to
yes.
look at the situation and say,
yes.
you know what? Is the money really worth all the troubles I'm facing
mm.
in the end? No, it's not. Okay, cool. Then what's the point of doing this? Am I doing it for the money or I'm doing it because I really like the project.
Yeah.
Because if you're doing it for the money, you can move on to the next project.
100%.
But if someone does not respect you or does not value you and the contributions you make, then it's always better for you to just walk away.
Mm.
And I feel like today's world, everybody thinks value is like, you know, this big thing. Value is just simple respect. Simple understanding respect, of what I am contributing, yes, to this project.
Yeah.
You are not just paying me, which means you're going to disregard me or treat me whichever way.
Mm.
No,
mm.
You respect me because you got me doing the job for you.
Yes.
And I respect you because you're paying me for the job.
For the job, 100%.
So just understanding, that simple understanding,
mm,
is a lot and it goes a long way. And a lot, yeah, of people miss that.
I mean, I know that some of the things that you're talking about now are things that you've gotten through your experience along the years, yeah, right? And some of them are probably, maybe you've someone that you vent to,
yeah,
about challenges in the industry.
Yeah.
Do you have a mentor?
I do.
Oh, you do?
I do.
Who's that?
So there is this gentleman, his name is Craig Rodney.
Okay.
And he runs a, so I've known Craig for a long time.
Yeah.
I met Craig during an Insta walk, when Instagram or Insta walks were a thing, 2014, 2015, where, mm-hmm, we would go into the CBD and take photos.
Yeah.
And at that time, Craig and his partner, Mike Starforth, used to run a company called Cerebra. And one of the Insta walks that we did was for Vodacom, where we would do stuff like content for, yeah, Vodacom. And they went and sold the company to another, the agency to another company.
Okay.
And he started an agency mentoring business where he mentors, you know, owners of businesses on how to deal with things.
Yeah.
And he's been my biggest like comforter when it comes to challenges that I face in business, because, mm, you know, I'll be sitting going through something or through a challenge and I'll call him and I'll say, hey man, this is what I'm going through.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, okay, cool. Have you thought about, you know, approaching it like this, like this? And I find it very refreshing to have a conversation with someone who's outside and someone who's experienced it on a bigger level compared to, mm, me, because their outlook is so different because they also started small,
yes,
and then they grew bigger and they know the challenges of being small and they know the challenges of just running a business. So he's kind of helped me, like, you know, find my value in the things that,
mm,
I say.
Yeah.
Because even what I'm saying, like about dropping clients,
yeah,
you know, he advocates for it,
yes,
because he says, if they're not giving you peace, then what are they bringing?
Yes.
Oof. So it's, you always have to consider, oof, that.
Yes.
Yeah.
So mentorship has played a big role in your career.
It has. It, yeah, has. And I feel like I found it too late. I feel like, you know, mentorship is not someone holding your hand, showing you how to do it, but it's someone, you know, guiding you and, you know, helping you find the way to deal with the problem. Mentors don't give you the answer.
No.
They ask you the questions,
yes,
so you find the answer yourself.
Yes.
You know,
questions that you weren't even thinking of.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's the best part, because,
yes,
they give you a different approach or a different outlook to the problem.
Mm.
And you start looking at it differently and how you can approach it. Sometimes, you know, I'll speak to Craig and I'm like, you know, this is what I'm dealing with. And he's like, okay, cool. Have you thought about doing this? And I'm like, no, I don't know why I didn't think about it. Because sometimes when you're in the eye of the storm, it's hard to see outside.
Of course.
Because you just see what you're going through.
Yeah.
And you don't think about anything else.
Yeah.
And asking someone for an opinion kind of helps, because they're not in the storm that you're in. And they can ask questions to help you reveal the issues and, yeah, how to deal with them better.
Do you have people that you mentor?
I think I do.
I know. I know why you're answering it that way. Because, yeah, you don't think that what you have to say is what people need to hear.
Not like that. I think people think mentorship is a formal thing. We need to make it a formal
and
thing.
Sit down
and have
like
coffee.
Like we're doing therapy.
Yes. And it's not. And sometimes it's just, in me speaking to you about the issues that you're facing. Mm. You know, I speak to a lot of young guys who are in the space.
Yeah.
And they'll tell me some of the issues that they're facing, how they can go about it. And we'll just have a frank conversation about what they're doing and how they're doing it and what they should look at. And sometimes they care for it, sometimes they don't, because I feel like sometimes people just want to hear you speak so that they can say they spoke to you.
Yes, I spoke to Austin. Austin said this.
And sometimes I feel like some do listen and they implement what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to think that might be like mentorship, even if it's not registered as, you know, this is someone that I speak to on a regular about the problems that I am facing, but this is someone who helps me overcome the challenges that I'm going through in my business.
Mm, I love that. Thank you. Want us to now dive deep into RTC.
Yes.
Yes. Actually, what does RTC stand for? You know, I've never asked you this question. Oh, my God. And actually, while I was doing my research, I did not pick it up.
Yeah.
I want you to bring me through the story of how you came to say it's RTC Studios.
Okay.
Yeah.
So a couple of years ago in 2018, I started a business with two partners.
Yeah.
And I was the third partner. And that business did not work out. That a year and a half into the business, I walked away from the business.
Okay.
And
ooh, so soon.
When we were doing really well when I walked away. Mm. And when I walked away, I needed to establish myself and build a new business. And I really liked the name the previous business had. And I couldn't take that away from the two partners as they wanted to carry on with the business.
Okay.
And I struggled to find a name for my business. And I remember I was having a conversation with my son's grandmother, and I was like, you know, I'm really like struggling to, you know, come up with a name for my new business. Yeah. And I am trying to register the business. And then she's like, why don't you name it after your son? I was that makes sense.
Because your son's name is
Ronewa Tiamokai.
Okay.
Ronewa Tiamokai Studios.
It's beautiful.
So I didn't want to put it all like
it is very full long
names. Yes. Yeah, because it's got, you know, three names. So I was just like, you know what? We'll just make the acronyms from his name. So it's RTC, Ronewa Tiamokai Studios. And then, yeah, that's where it started.
That's an interesting fact.
Thank you.
So interesting. I know when we shot my cover for the podcast, I did ask you about your logo.
Yes.
And you took me through it.
Yes.
And I genuinely think you're a creative genius. Okay. And some of the things that you guys offer at RTC are like, you know, creative solutions.
Yes.
For clients. Like you said earlier on that you don't just take a picture and send to the clients. You bring solutions.
Yes.
Right. So it's been 5 years now.
Yeah.
How's that been going?
I think it's been an interesting 5 years. And mainly because when you think about small businesses, most small businesses fail before they hit the year five.
Mm.
And I think for us, making it to year number five, and we've grown in terms of the number of people in the business, has been fulfilling for me. Number one, it just means that the business is doing really well.
Yeah.
And I think it has strengthened our offerings as a business, because having different people who come in, you know, with different expertise kind of helps, you know, hence the fact that we don't just offer the creative itself or, you know, the final result being photography. We like to work with the clients on offering solutions to the creative issue.
Yes.
So whatever the creative problem is, we like to be involved so that we can help you along the way figure out the issue so that we can get to the result being the photography or the content that we're creating.
Yes.
Yeah.
And what has been some of the challenges when you needed to hire people? And I'm asking this. I'm asking this purely because, I mean, you have a pool of friends, right? Yes. And I can imagine in a day you get approached by a lot of people that want to work for your company. And I mean, I can say, Austin, you know, this is what I do. I'm a producer. Can I come work for you? What are some of the challenges that you've had to face with hiring friends or family?
Oh, my God. Can I tell you the truth?
Yeah, please.
This is a conversation that I recently had with my partner. And I think without following due process to hire people, sometimes people think that their value is higher than the company's value because you've just chosen to employ them, right? And you did not interview for the role. You did not advertise the role. And that sometimes can be detrimental to the company because people can behave the way that they want to behave because they have been just given the role.
Yes.
It was handed to them.
Yes.
They didn't have to do anything for it.
Didn't even have to go through the process of being hired, interviewed, and...
And I've learned that quite a few times. And I believe it's very important for anyone who runs a business to do things correctly.
Yeah.
It's amazing to want to hire the creatives that you believe would be suitable for your business, but it's also not a smart thing to just go ahead and offer a position. You should make people work for the position. And I know by saying that it sounds very weird, but you should make people know that there is value to the position. You are not just handing it to them so that when they walk in, they're like, you know what, without me, you can't do anything. Have
to,
And I think that's a very big mistake I made and I learned from it.
Yeah.
And I've learned that from now on, when it comes to hiring, I need to open the pool.
Yes.
Because you are also not looking at other talent, right? And you're choosing the person that you believe is suitable for the job for whatever reason, whether it's attitude, whether it's the fact that they've shown in work that you've done with them before that they can do it.
Yeah.
But if they just get given a position, I don't think people really value it. It's like someone giving you something that you didn't work for. And then when you get it, you feel pompous about it because I deserved it.
Yes.
They gave it to me because I deserve it.
Yes.
And that's what happens. That's what I believe happens with employees when you just give someone a position that they did not really have to work for, have not proven their value to that position. And I believe a lot of people may frown upon what I'm saying, but my experience has proven that just handing a position to someone does not mean that that person is the suitable candidate for the position. Whether it be friend, family, you know, I would choose not to work with family in any situation in my life.
Yeah.
Because a lot of things get conflated where work is work, even friends.
Even
where
friends.
You have to speak about work and people think you are attacking them. Or I don't even know why I'm saying attacking, but when you speak to them about work, they think you are attacking them on a personal level. Because they know you, right?
Yes.
They don't want you to be their employer. They want you to always be cool with them, no matter what happens.
Doesn't work like that.
It doesn't work like that in business. We are building.
I'm glad you got that. We are building here.
So as you're building, things will go wrong and we need to be able to address them without...
And hold people accountable.
And hold people accountable without it being personal. But I also just feel like... Many people in today's world, we hold everything close and dear to our heart that we can't separate work and personal.
Oh.
And that's the worst part.
Yeah.
Because someone could be correcting you about work. And I've seen it with some projects we've worked on with different people where you're correcting someone about work and then they shut off. And it's almost as if you are attacking them on a personal level. But it's like, no, you need to be able to separate work and personal.
Yes.
So that I can be able to still have both relationships with you. If it's a work relationship, I need to call out what you're doing wrong. It takes a certain
kind of person.
It does, but it also takes, I think...
Honestly.
I think the newer generation, the younger generation have it tougher.
They do have it tougher.
They have it tougher than us because some of us have had to work, you know, for bosses who were not so friendly.
Yeah.
And I feel like some mistakes that some of us make is being too friendly as bosses, that when you now call people to order, they think that there's something wrong.
And there's just nothing
There is wrong. Nothing wrong.
Which is communicating. It's like That's in relationships.
It. Yes.
Which is communicating and it's okay to disagree.
I love what you're saying about it's like relationships.
It really
but
is.
But a lot of people don't see work as a relationship anymore.
And maybe that's the problem.
That's the problem.
Yeah.
That's the biggest issue that we have made it cool to have a job. We've made it cool that, you know, someone works at a certain place, that, you know, the relationship between employer and employee is no longer valued.
Ooh.
people don't understand the difference. Yeah. And I say this because I've been in instances where people that I pay are competing with me, but they forget that I am paying their salary. I'm the person who brought them here.
Yes.
So why do you feel the need to compete with me?
And you don't want to be that guy to say, Pelan, don't forget, you're all here because
of
me.
But when you say it, you're an asshole or you are a bad boss. Oh. But when they compete with you, it's fair.
Oh, my God.
But it's like, I don't need to compete with you because I am paying you at the end of the month.
Mm.
And the reason you are here is so that you can fill a void or give a service that you are good at. So you don't need to compete with me.
Mm-mm.
Because at the end of the day, I am the person who gave you the position. So why do you feel the need to compete with me in my own business? And I'm still the same person who pays your salary.
How do you deal with those things then? If we're being practical, how do you deal with Nina's? You can see them really competing with you in your own business. I can imagine that these are some of the challenges that other business owners are dealing facing. With, you know, and that are facing. Because, I mean, I can imagine that maybe make a scenario that you are presenting to a client. You're taking them through a treatment, right? Yeah. And you're sitting with a junior photographer who wants to have a say in the meeting.
And
want to outshine you. God. Like, I think, and this is just in general, in workspaces, that everyone just needs to know their place.
I think a lot of young people don't know their place in the workspace anymore.
Yes.
But it's also because of the value we give to them and their positions, because we want people to be able to do their jobs without us, you know, overlooking and overseeing everything that they do.
Yes.
That they feel like they can just do anything and challenge you and do what you're doing so that they can compete with you in that way. Oh. I feel like we give people too much freedom in the positions, and by not giving them that freedom, then they get mad about it. But then when you give them the freedom, they take it and run with it and compete with you in your own space.
Mm.
It's a catch-22 that one has to find the best way to deal with it.
Yeah.
Because again, the other issue is also the personalities of those people, because that becomes another issue that you must now deal with.
Yeah.
And you can't just approach the issue at its core without hurting another part of the person.
Mm.
It's such a difficult thing to navigate thing. Because you can't just deal with the main issue, which is someone competing with you, trying to outdo you in your own business.
Mm.
You don't have to compete and outdo me in my business because I've employed you to do something.
Yes.
You don't need to compete.
I need you here.
Yes. So you can't compete with me or you don't have to
because you really if you don't have the position, to. You really don't
just
have
do
to.
Your, play your part. Mm. Competing with me is weird because if people can see it, then they're just like, what is happening? Because it looks like there's friction in the business or tension in the business because someone has chosen not to accept their position being a junior or being employed by someone else. And if you can't be employed by someone else, then you shouldn't have applied for a job that requires you to work.
Do they even apply? But you know, I was thinking to myself that I'm really glad that I got to work in companies.
Yes.
Right? I'm so glad because there are certain, and this is what I would advise people, right, that want to get to certain positions later in life, because this day and age is so tricky, Austin. People just see things on Instagram and they think it just happened in a day.
Yeah.
No. You know, and I feel like a lot of entrepreneurs and a lot of business owners will tell you that they had to start somewhere.
Yeah.
Where you have a boss.
Yes.
Where you need to apply for leave.
Yes.
And the value of having a day off.
Yes.
You know, and the value of keeping time.
Yeah.
The value of keeping deadlines, which I wanted us to get into, but I'm going to pause that for now. But I found myself so grateful that I really did go through the process of having a 9-to-5 job, because these days it seems uncool to have a 9-to-5 job. And people really shy away from the part that it plays in your career.
Yeah.
Because there are certain things that you can only learn
from a 9-to-5.
From a 9-to-5 job.
That's true.
No matter how brilliant you are, ne?
Yes.
Like, it teaches you systems. It teaches you keeping time. It teaches you understanding that this one is my senior. That's the CEO. Also, the CEO in companies, we don't just talk to them like we talk to our friends.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean?
But that's the biggest issue, because again, and it always goes back to employing people who do not have that understanding, employing your friends, employing people because they're good at something and they do not come from that system.
That background,
I believe it's very important. Like for me now, it's essential if I'm going to be hiring someone, I need someone who has worked in a company and in a formal business, not someone who has worked in just a small business, because small businesses are still building their systems.
100%, yes. They haven't figured things out as well, yes.
And then you're coming and bringing someone who hasn't figured out themselves into a system that's not fully complete.
Ooh.
Now, they can do whatever they want because they take advantage of the fact that the system is not complete.
Yes.
Right?
And also, there is no system. There is no system.
So I could just take advantage of that.
Yeah.
Unlike a company that, you know, already has systems, and someone who comes from a company that has systems, because they can help you, you know, build your systems easier.
100%.
And they also know the responsibilities that they have themselves.
Yes.
And the fact that there was a system back there and it was tough.
Yeah.
But here, they're building the system. Their ropes are slightly loose, but I can't just get away with chicken murder or murder myself and then walk away and just do whatever I want without taking responsibility. So there's many things to consider in all of these things, to be honest.
Oh, there is.
I prefer in today's world, if I had a role open in my company, I would prefer to have someone who comes from a system-based world or who has worked a 9-to-5 job, because it's easy to have conversations. It's easy to explain things and why we do things a certain way.
And they don't take it in a different way.
They don't take it in a different way. They don't take it as an offense or you offending them or their character or anything like that. They
this
take
is
feedback
work.
As feedback. Mm. Work is work.
Yeah.
After this time, we can have a conversation about
100%.
Things.
100%.
You know? Yeah. If I'm talking about work and I overstep, you are allowed to call me back or call me into place and say, listen, I feel like you are now, you know, bordering on my personality or on my character, not just the work.
Yeah.
But I've had instances where we are reviewing work and you talk about or you shut down ideas and people now don't want to do anything because they're like, you know, you just shut down. But it's like, I'm not shutting it down because I'm shutting you down. I'm shutting down the idea because it doesn't work.
Let's go back to the drawing board. Yes.
And rework it.
Yes.
And it doesn't mean the end, you know? And it's very difficult as a small business because these are the problems you deal with. But part of them are self-inflicted because of the things we do, thinking that we are building and we're bringing the people that we think are suitable for
that
our business. Yes, we think. Because we haven't interviewed them.
Oof.
We haven't taken them through the proper process.
Oh.
So we now end up making decisions on what we see on an outside perspective without knowing what the person is like. And that's the worst mistakes I've made in my business. I think, you know, I keep learning and
I keep refining things. Yes.
But from here on, you know, I've learned that don't make the same mistakes again because it burns you. And when it burns, you know, you have yourself to blame. You can't blame the person because you hired them. Right. And you gave them, you know, the ability to treat you the way they treat you or treat your business the way they treat it.
Yeah.
So now it's up to you to change that with the next person.
Yeah. So, I mean, as a small business, then I guess your advice would be maybe as the founder of the company to remove yourself from the hiring process per se.
Yes.
Like maybe even having people involved in the hiring process,
true.
Right?
Yeah.
In terms of, I know that big corporates really take you through a process.
Yeah, and it's
which
it's
I hate
rigorous.
Personally. Yeah, yeah. Oh my God. Like they, you go through 3 interviews and then, you know, but it's for a very good reason.
Yes.
And I value that so much, even though it's such a drag.
Yeah.
But I value it because there's a lot of things that they also get to pick up
on you.
When you have a conversation.
Yes.
Some companies even go as far as giving you a task to do.
Yeah.
Right? To see, okay, can this person actually take instructions?
Yes.
Very important, you know. And they even ask you things like, if your boss shouted and, you know, how would you react?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I guess it's tricky having a small business. Scary for
it's
some.
It's the trickiest thing that anyone could ever do to themselves. I think the
if you had to go back 5 years ago and undo RTC, would you?
No, I would not undo it. I would just hire people to deal with the human factor earlier.
Okay.
Without having to do it myself.
Yeah.
Because the thing about it is, and it's very difficult, as a small business, you are involved in everything. And sometimes the people in your business think that you guys are on the same level. Because you do the same work. You work in the same space.
Mm.
So you hang out together
yes.
at work.
Yes.
So people
you're on the ground together at an event.
Yes. Now people forget that you are still their employer, because some of them say, but I can shoot better than him. I can do this. I can do this. Then it's like, okay, the disrespect starts coming in from that point.
Yeah.
Because they all look at it and they say, yeah, but I'm better than him. Why is he getting all the clients? Why is he the boss? Mm. Now they start questioning everything.
Everything.
And then it's like, then once those questions start coming in, then they start disrespecting you in front of your face or in front of other people in the team.
Mm. How do you overcome those? And I want you to be very practical with me, right? Do you need to call someone out, speak to them on the side? Do you need to
I've done all of them. I've done the calling someone out in front of everyone, then it's bad. I've tried speaking to them on their own, but then it doesn't address the issue with everyone else.
Yes.
Again, none of it seems to be perfect.
Mm.
You know, do you take a day off, you know, so that you know how to react the next time? But you take the day off, then they think you're a coward. Then there's many things to consider in all of these things.
My God.
You know, you take the day off so that you don't break
and lash out.
But then it's like, you know, depending on the person and their ego, then I've won. You know, he didn't come to work. Or, you know, there's many issues.
And he didn't respond to me. He kept quiet.
There you go. Yeah. So I've put him in his place.
Yeah.
So there are many ways to deal with these issues. But what I've found is creating systems that allows for HR to come in and, you know, help you guys build the fundamentals of how the business runs and how to deal with any issues that come or that may arise. And that becomes the best way to govern any relationship.
Gotcha.
So I think with us, we kind of have policies in the business. We run like a real business. Like we are not just a photography studio.
Yes,
we have
policies, it's a real business,
that govern the relationship between the employer and the employee.
Mm.
And each of those policies gives you what you can and cannot do, what is expected of you, and the repercussions of not doing what is not expected of you. So that kind of helps. But at some point, even those policies, some people don't really care for it. And you learn that later on in life.
In life,
because people just look at them as, you know, these are policies for me. And nobody looks at it as, these policies govern the relationship between employer and employee. Because if the employer does something wrong, I can use the same policies
100% to keep them. Him accountable.
There you go.
Yes.
And a lot of people think it's just to keep me accountable by myself.
Mm.
But we are governed by a contract and by the policies. And those things help us stay accountable to each other.
Yeah.
And people don't see that, because employees always think that they are at the mercy of the employer.
Oh,
but it's actually not like that.
It's really not like that.
It is a relationship between two people that is governed by a certain set of rules that are meant to keep everybody happy.
Yeah.
That's it.
And I mean, you, a lot of young photographers look up to you and your work, right? And pretty sure you've gotten this question before, but for someone watching, they are an aspiring photographer. They want to work with big brands like Austin, you know, and shoot, you know, really big profiled people.
Yeah.
What advice do you have for someone right now in terms of how to position themselves, right? You're a young photographer, you've got a camera, you shoot here and there, but you really want to take this thing to the next level. How can you better position yourself? Do you put your profile online? Do you speak to people? Like, what is the most practical thing to do?
I think it's very I think it's very tricky in today's world, just sharing advice, because of how saturated the industry is becoming. Number one, because everybody can do it and everybody's online. But I think the biggest thing is what makes you stand out. And again, the biggest thing that I could say to anyone is establish relationships with people that can trust you to do work for them.
Mm-hmm.
And that allows you to get into the right spaces. So yes, you've got a profile online. make sure that people see the work that you do first. And then after that, you establish relationships with reputable photographers that you become a second shooter,
okay,
or you become, you know, an assistant.
Mm.
And then when there's jobs, they're able to call you as a second shooter or when they need an assistant. And that allows you to build a reputation with them. Then by doing that, you build a network amongst those people and their network that when there's no work, I used to do this, you know, with other people before, yeah, I started a business where, yeah, my second shooter would be the next person who gets a job if I'm not available.
Yes.
You know, if I'm not available, there's this guy who I shoot with a lot, just call him.
Yeah.
You know, that was the real reason why I started the business, because I couldn't, you know, carry on giving away work to other people. And I was like,
so let everything be in the house.
There you go.
Yes.
And then I can pay those people.
Of course.
So rather establish a network of people that you work with,
mm-hmm,
and they will always put you forward for work and they will work with you. And it allows you to build your own portfolio,
yeah,
with them,
mm-hmm,
without having to reach out to too many brands by yourself and get rejected.
Yeah.
If you've got someone like me who already has, you know, a network of brands that I work with, and then you work with me, it allows you to now, you know, GQ has a cover that they're doing and I am not available. You're the next person that I'm going to suggest,
yes,
you know? You know, there's a client who's looking for someone and I'm not available. I always just go down my line. I'm like, okay, cool.
Mm.
Who's the next person? I'm not available. Henry's available. Henry's not available. Kumocho's available.
Yeah.
So there's always someone who's going to take the work.
Yeah.
So it just helps to have that network because you don't struggle as much.
Mm. And do you also agree to the line that says there's a lot of work for everyone?
I don't think so.
You don't
I think
so?
Everybody's fooling everybody because people are trying to get everybody else's clients. Mm. So if there's a lot of work,
so
then
it's a
why
battle
are you doing
here
that?
Creative space, eh?
It is.
Yeah.
I think people just want to sound like, you know, they are not threatened.
Yeah.
Or they've got it all figured out.
Mm.
That they say the pie is big enough. The pie is not big enough if people are competing for the same clients. You can't say the pie is big enough,
yeah,
and we are all pitching for the same client every other week.
Mm.
How big is that pie then?
Oh,
like, just consider that. Like, you know, I always feel like people have these profound things that they say to either protect themselves or to make themselves look like they're not competing with other people.
Mm.
I feel like people need to start being honest. And I say this because I've seen people that say the same thing, pitching for the same clients we work with. And then now when they get it, it's like, oh, okay, cool. The pie is big enough, but it's not big enough because you've taken from my table.
Yeah.
So how do you say the pie is big enough if you're taking from my table? Let's just all be honest and say the pie is not as big as it used to be. And everybody's
looking
for a piece.
It was big at some point.
Yes.
It was big at some point.
There was a point where the pie was big.
Mm.
But now we are all fighting for breadcrumbs.
And the tricky thing about now is that brands are just... they want loyalty. The reason why they want to work with Austin Malema is because they trust that you're going to deliver on time.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
And I wanted to use the word loyalty, but maybe not. That's not the word.
Yeah.
But also brands really want to say, okay, we really need this by 10.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
And because brands, being your clients, they also have their clients.
Yes.
That they need to, you know, communicate to. So they want to be able to say, no, you'll have it by 10.
Yeah.
Knowing that the supplier, which is Austin Malema or whoever, will indeed, you know, deliver something by 10.
Yes.
Right? And I think that maybe a big struggle that I've come across as well as a producer is turnaround times and missing deadlines.
Yeah.
I hate missing a deadline personally.
Same here.
Not in my team.
Yeah.
Not where there's Nina Masuku. We are not missing deadlines.
Yeah.
There is sometimes a challenge when sometimes things are briefed in late,
yes,
right? Or sometimes our clients do expect things quicker. Without understanding the process, right? Like,
yeah,
if I was your client and I know nothing about editing, I think, Austin, why would you need 3 days to edit a video?
Mm-hmm.
It's just a video. You're just putting together. But they don't know that it's selecting moments.
Yes.
It's selecting the music, you know, and things like that. So, yeah, this chat about the pie is very intense.
I think the big thing about all of these challenges, and I just have to say, this entire thing of timelines,
yeah,
for the very first time this year, I had a non-delivery on a job. Not a non-delivery, it was actually a late delivery.
Okay.
That we missed a deadline by a day. It was for the very first time in the 5 years of running the business
that has ever happened.
Okay, and well, first of all, well done, because you are known for never missing deadlines. I know that, that very much about you.
Yeah. And the one thing about that was, it was very sad, but it was also a reminder that we as a business, we are still human.
Okay.
It sometimes you need those experiences.
And the people you hired are human.
Yes. Mm. And sometimes you need those experiences so that you can get humbled.
Oh.
You need those experiences to say even the great ones will fall from grace now and again. Ugh. And then it just gets you to restructure.
Even the great ones will fall from grace every now and again.
That's it.
Okay.
And I do think, you know, we've worked really hard to make sure that we do not miss deadlines, whether it's having extra staff or having enough people in the team.
Yeah.
Or implementing the fact that we deliver or we have an editor on the job, even if they are not required to edit today. Because what we try to do is not create a backlog in the business.
Yeah.
That's the biggest thing. The biggest reason any deadline is missed is either because there's a backlog in the business and things start falling off, or you start selecting what you're going to work on because this is more important, this is not as important. And once you start doing that, you're now being selective of the clients and who's more important. And we try not to do that in the business. Everybody is essentially important in the business.
Yeah.
We need to deliver in the best way and as quick as possible and still deliver the best work.
Yeah.
You know, because that's your reputation. Every project is your last project.
Yep.
With that client.
100%.
Whether you deliver the best job today.
Yep.
Or the worst job today, it's your next job.
Mm.
It's your last job, but it's also your next job.
100%.
Because if you deliver late, they're not happy. If you deliver bad, they're not happy. But if you deliver early or if you deliver on time and you deliver well, that's your next client again because they're happy.
Yes.
So you always have to be careful of that. For me, I always try and make sure that every job that we're working on either has, you know, the best way we do it is we have an editor on site for each job, especially photography and videography. We will have an editor on site even if they're not required. Because what that does is by the time that they leave the job, the cut is done. Even if it's not due today.
Yes.
Because tomorrow just there's another project.
100%.
And then by 100%. The time we deliver, then it's done.
Yes.
We don't have to wait an extra day. Mm. We don't have to. No. By the time we deliver the next job, tomorrow you're moving on to the next job. We never really have backlog of work because we try and make sure that all the work is being processed as we do it.
So we don't have to wait. Just because we've got 14 days to deliver
doesn't
mean that we have to wait 14 days or start delivering on day 7.
The thing with the 14 days is, and this is what I discovered earlier on in my career, the jobs that you do 14 days later, you're not passionate about them anymore. As you were when you were shooting them.
Yep.
You get bored.
Yep.
You're not in the moment. Mm-mm. You're not in the mood.
100%.
So now it's a drag to even do the job.
Oh.
So imagine if you did it while it was happening and you could see it. You are in the moment. You can see what's happening.
Yes.
Then it's quicker. You express that job out quickly and then client is happy. Whether they're going to post it a month away from now, 10 days from now, they have it.
Yeah.
You're moving on to the
next thing. Tell me something. What is the one thing as a business owner or an entrepreneur that you've had to be honest with yourself about? Like, I know with me, I'm good at quite a lot of things, but there's somewhere where I lack. And I've had to be like, you know what? This one.
It's not for me.
Yeah. What is the one thing that you've had to be honest with yourself about?
I think I used to be a people pleaser. Okay. I used to try and make everybody happy.
Happy, yes.
And the one thing that you learn in business is you can't do that.
Mm.
You can't do that. You can't make anybody happy. If you're going to make anybody happy, it's probably going to be 80% of the people and not 100%.
But it will never be 100%.
It will never be 100%.
Someone, some way is going to have a problem.
Yeah. And I'm quite okay with it. I think I'm very resolved where I am now as a business owner to know that a lot of challenges will arise and no matter how you deal with them, people will not be happy.
Yeah.
Whether it's everyone in the business or 20% in the business or 80% in the business. But when you deal with issues, you just have to make sure that it follows a policy and it's not to spite anyone or to make things tense in the business. No matter what you do, people are never going to be happy with you as a business owner. It doesn't matter what you do, no matter who you are. As a business owner, people are never going to be happy with you.
That is hard.
It's hard, but it's also, they say you need to be a bit insane to run a business. Yeah, you need
delusion.
Yes, delusional. Yes, you need to be a bit delusional.
Yes.
And I think it's the delusions that keep you going as a business owner. I think it's, because it's very challenging. I keep saying this. Like, people don't understand. Like, you know, we were talking about it yesterday in the office with one of the guys that, you know, everybody like glamorizes entrepreneurship, but it's not as glamorous as people make it out to be.
I have never thought it's glamorous.
No.
Maybe because I'm exposed to people that are in business. And the one thing I hear is like, oh, yeah, no. It's tough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you can't even celebrate. You can't. Yeah. You celebrate the small wins, but then on to the next because there's another challenge waiting for you. Mm. You celebrate making it past month end today. And then you've got
the other month end is in two minutes. Literally.
And you've got to consider how you're making it past that.
Oh, my God. As a photographer, right? We are nearing to our end now.
You don't have to near it. You can still continue asking questions. You'll have many gems.
All the answers.
Yes.
I want to know. So when you did my, when you shot my cover.
Yes.
Right. And I was, I think when I got to the set, I was just feeling a little off.
Tense.
Yeah. And you have a way of making whoever is in front of the camera feel good, right? It's either in how you relax them, you have just words to say, right? Because you were able to just make me calm down, you know, from the nerves I was feeling at the time. And look, I love taking pictures. You know, I could take pictures every single day. Yes. But, you know, obviously I was just nervous at the time. It had been a long morning. And when I got in front of the camera, you had a way to just ease me into, you know, how important is it for photographers to have that? And just understanding that as a photographer, your job is not just to click.
Yeah.
Right? I'm shooting here. Like, how important is it as a photographer to just have that synergy with, let's say, talent in front of the camera?
I think it's very important. And this is something I learned from one of my favorite photographers, Platon Anatoa.
Mm.
He's photographed most of the biggest world leaders in the country, the most world leaders in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And what he does, which is really amazing, is he will study each person, almost like compile a research pack on who they are. And then
whoever he's going to shoot.
Yeah. And then they come into the studio. And then the first thing he does is he tries to have a conversation with them before he takes the photos.
Okay.
Number one. Okay. That is creating human connection. Because now it's not just about the photos. Even when you step in front of the camera, we have a connection that we've established before you step in front of the camera.
Yes.
And that on its own helps people relax.
Yeah.
Because you're having a different conversation. You connect on a different level that when you walk in front of the camera, you're relaxed. Yes. Yeah. And you're not paying attention to it. And that has become, you know, the best way to disarm people in front of camera because they always worry about how they look. But when you're having a conversation with someone that you're relaxed with or you're talking to someone, you don't tense up.
True.
But if I am, you just step in front of the camera and I'm like, do this, you become very wary of yourself that you start overthinking things.
Yes.
But if you are having a conversation or I'm having a conversation with you and also telling you what to do, that kind of helps because in your mind, you having a conversation, then the instruction becomes part of the conversation.
Mm.
It's not just an instruction. So I kind of learned that and I started just having conversations with people and trying to connect with humans before we take the photos.
The photos, yeah.
Because then that allows us to have something to talk about even when we take the photos.
Yes.
Because it becomes a conversation that just flows from pre to during and even post.
Mm.
And the more relaxed people are, the easier and the quicker it is to take the photos.
True that. And obviously some music playing in the background.
True.
What has been some of your aha moments in your career?
Damn.
Some projects or some productions that you've shot and it's been like, wow.
I think each project has been a stepping block.
Okay.
For the next, for the business, for myself, because each of them have contributed something to where we are today.
Yeah.
And for me, I don't have favorite projects. or, you know, projects that I hold dear to me, because I feel like it's selecting your favorite project to be your almost like your penultimate project.
Yeah, yeah.
And as soon as you do that, you measure yourself up against that project because then you say, oh, I shot David Beckham. Okay, cool. That's, you know, the biggest thing. And then that becomes the ceiling for you.
Yeah.
And I try not to
put... I get what you mean there.
Yeah, I try not to put a ceiling up for myself. Mm-hmm. Each of these projects have all contributed something. I've learned something. I picked up something. I did something amazing. So I always say that my favorite project is my next project because it allows me to express myself differently. My aha moments, I'll tell you... these are moments that I did not anticipate.
Okay. I like that.
I think photographing David Beckham was a great experience.
Great one. Okay.
And I got to... So the first time I photographed him, I just directed him and never really had a conversation with him because of how bad it was and how quick we had to shoot.
Okay.
I just had to give instruction and he would, you know, pose the way I needed.
Mm.
And then I remember... 2019, I went to Scotland and we were shooting content with David and I had a full-on conversation with him.
Okay.
And that was...
Was this about things in general or what we were about to shoot?
It was about something I wanted to shoot with him.
Okay.
In general though. Okay. Okay. Outside of what we were shooting
at the time. Yes.
And it was such a pleasurable moment to have that conversation with him as a human. Like, and there was no management around at that time.
It is just
me and him together having a conversation. That was a great moment for me. What else? Man, I've got so many great moments that
I can imagine.
I've enjoyed.
Yeah.
And it's so hard to pick
some
of them. It's also because of how unexpected they are, you know.
Yes.
It's like I like to live in the moment. That one was not with work, but
no, you can share it.
I got to meet. I've only found out twice in my life to two people,
and that is
Trevor Gumbi when he was like back in the day when he still did a lot of stand-up.
Yes.
And I met him and I was like a big fan of his stand-up.
Yeah.
And then early this year, I met Sasha Feinberg Mngome Zulu, who is a great rugby player. And
obviously you and rugby.
and that like for me on a personal level, and I was at work at that time, that on its own was a great like... unexpected moment where I was a fan of someone who contributes to something I care about. Those are the moments that I hardly get starstruck, especially because of the work. So I don't think there's anything about, you know, that would do with a lot of like celebrities that you know, throw me off. I think because I'm at work, I let work be a priority. Work.
Yes.
Yes.
And then we'll do the rest after.
We'll do the rest. If there's a moment.
Mm.
Like
you know, in the midst of that though, do you have fun doing what you do?
I enjoy doing what I'm doing. I love showing up at work. I love
creating.
Yeah. I love the idea of starting off on a blank canvas and trying to make something of it.
Yeah.
I love walking onto a set, having an idea and seeing how it turns out in the end.
Mm-hmm.
Because you normally see something on paper and you think this is how it's going to look.
And then
when you finally make it, then you're like, okay, cool. This is not what I expected. It's either better than what I saw or it's exactly what I wanted.
Mm. Okay.
Yeah.
I think that's where we're going to end it for the day. Last.
Okay.
What do you think is your superpower as Austin Malema? What do you think makes you stand out?
Whew. Damn.
Hmm.
That's a very tricky question. I don't know. My superpower.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Nina. I mean, how to save the hardest question for the end.
Look, you take great pictures, but there must be something like underneath, right? That you think you know. Because, I mean, we can all take pictures, but
true.
You know, there's a reason why an Austin Malema picture is great or an Austin Malema's work is great. What do you think that is? What do you think is your superpower?
I think in terms of work,
yeah,
I think my superpower is patience.
Okay.
I tell you why.
Mm.
I love watching people. Okay. I love watching people interact.
Okay.
And I will sit across the bar with the camera to my eye and wait for someone to smile.
Okay.
I will not. Just I will wait. I will anticipate the moment. Mm. And that for me is probably my biggest superpower, is my patience to get the moment.
Okay.
I allow myself time. And I wait, and I will wait. And it's almost as if you are stalking people's conversations, but you can't hear what they say.
Yes, yes.
But you wait for that moment of release, that moment of laughter.
Yeah.
You know, that's always, you know, it's always guaranteed.
Does that apply in how you look at life in terms of trusting the process? Do you also have patience there?
No.
So it's just in front of the camera.
It's only if I am working. Honest. I love capturing moments in their rawest time or their rawest moment.
Yeah.
You know, and I want to be able to catch that moment. And I am patient enough to know that at some point someone's gonna smile, someone's gonna have a reaction. So I will wait for it.
Mm.
Yeah.
And why don't photographers like taking pictures? You know, I only have probably 6 pictures that I've ever seen of Austin Malema.
I think it's I don't know. In today's world, it's very different with the younger guys. They have lots of photos.
Yeah.
Because they're also personalities as well.
Yes, of course.
And I used to be the same back in the day, 2017, 2016, when I was trying to be an influencer as well. But I think it just ends up becoming a thing where you're at work and you just blend in, right? And then when you now get to a point where there are cameras, you're not really excited about it. I think it also just reminds you of work.
Okay.
It just feels like work, so you don't think.
Just focus on work.
Yeah, just focus on what you're doing. And I believe, you know, the best time to even take photos of photographers is when they are in the moment.
Yeah.
You know, don't try make them pose because
stand
they
still.
Yeah. Don't
they
try do that because then they are aware of themselves.
Yeah.
And then that might not be the greatest, you know, way to get them to comply for a photo.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean it now. That was the last question.
I can talk a lot.
But thank you so much for coming through. I wish we had more time actually. But thank you so much for coming through. I hope you know that you've done really great for yourself.
There's
things that you've said that I didn't know.
Yeah.
Right. And I'm inspired personally also on my career journey, you know, to know that you did not just get here. Hey.
Yeah, I know.
It has gone up and down, you know, and people look at you and think, Austin Malema, I want to be like Austin Malema. But it's very important for us to have these conversations with people like you that people look up to so that people can understand that there's a story behind this. You know, there was time invested. You know, you've had to work. You've had to kiss some frogs, like they say. You know what I mean? Before for you to be where you are today. So I think it's very important for us to have these conversations. Thank you so much.
I think the last thing I needed to say, because I was asked to say this, because I said it in the makeup room.
Oh, yeah.
I think a lot of people need to consider the fact that there is nothing, there is no such thing as rock bottom. I think when you fail or you go, you know, you slip from the place where you were, you're not failing, you know. English is running away from me. The entire process of success, we all keep chasing success as if it's the penultimate thing, right? Because we want to be there. But the whole point of, you know, going back to the bottom or falling to the bottom, you've been there, you've built before. It's something familiar. You are aware of it.
Yeah.
What you were not aware of is the success. So if you ever go back to the familiar, you need to decide, do you stay in the familiar or do you chase what you previously had, which was the success?
Oh, beautiful. Just dropped gems. Wisdom. Hey, they don't call you the Austin Malema for no reason.
Oh my God.
That's the so Austin funny. Malema.
Oh, thank
well,
you.
There you have it, A&E gang. Another episode in the bag. We had such a nice chat with Austin Malema. I hope that you did take some of the lessons and, you know, the insights that he's had to share. I know I did, okay? I know I did, and I can't wait for you guys to hear it. Please don't forget to like and subscribe. Drop something in the comments and let us know what you think. I'll see you on the next one. Bye.